Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to those of you on the East Coast and to those of you on the West Coast, like my guest. Good afternoon. So, my guest tonight is going to be Tanya Lamani George. And most of you know who she is. She is a very well-known actress, and she's also an author. And for some reason, Blog Talk Radio isn't letting me dial, so please bear with me for just a moment. And I'm going to try her number again. And here we go, and hopefully it should start ringing in a minute. Tanya Lamani George. I don't hear it ringing. Ah, oh, there we go. And hopefully she'll answer soon. Okay.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Tanya.
Hello.
Hello,
I'm speaking.
Is Matt. Can you hear me?
Yes,
oh,
I can. Can you hear me? I was just sending people notices that they should listen to the show. You know, I've been so busy today. So it is on my Facebook, but I really haven't done too much of that other personal contact. You know, how are you?
I am good. And how are you doing? I mean, you know, especially with the COVID and all that kind of crap. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I don't want to talk about it. It's so depressing. Everything is so depressing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do my show a little bit different than I usually do, because normally I ask stuff like, you know, how did you get into the business? But since you cover that stuff in your book, Belly Will Travel, I was just gonna let you talk about that. But before you do, I wanted to let the listeners know I have read this book. It's called Have Belly, Will Travel. And you will learn things about my guest that you probably have never realized. And it is very raw, very true to life, and you will not be able to put it down and probably read it within 2 days. That's what happened with me. So please, if you have enough money, buy some kind of a copy, whether it be Kindle or not. And now, without further ado, my guest is going to talk about the book, Have Belly, Will Travel. Go ahead.
Okay, Mac. Well, I don't know. Where do I begin? You know, I came into this country, I was 12 years old, and I had a dream. My parents, too, had their dreams. But we were poor. We were living in a basement of some friends, and we were too proud to take any money from the government, so we all went to work. I was working after school. My parents were, my father, who was very highly educated, was working as a janitor. My mother was working as cleaning rooms in hotels, but we all had our dream, and my dream was to go to Hollywood and get into the film business, okay? And people looked at me, and I was like, I couldn't speak English very well and everything. They all laughed at me. My father made me wear braids, you know. They all were laughing at me. I go, oh, no, I'm going to Hollywood. So when I finally saved enough money and started taking some lessons and everything, I decided to start my career. And basically, I started at the age of 16, and before even I graduated from high school. And because of my dance training, which my book starts with my ballet experience, I was asked by a choreographer to go to Las Vegas. I thought, oh my God, Las Vegas is like going to another planet, you know? So anyway, yeah. Before I knew it, I was in Las Vegas looking for a ballet dancers. They all looked at me and they said, there is no ballet dancers here at the Flamingo Hotel. There is a show that's opening tomorrow. It's belly dancing, you know? I go, oh my God, belly dancing. My father's going to kill me. He's an old-fashioned father, you know? So, yeah, so before I knew it, I was on that stage behind the headliners, trying not to bump into anyone. I didn't know the routines or anything. I had training in dance, but never in a belly dance, you know? So That's how the book starts, okay? And as it goes on, I was asked the next time, I was asked to go to Desert Inn and do a solo dance. And of course, I never did a solo dance or play cymbals, you know, finger cymbals or anything. So I started practicing to a song that I bought, which I thought was a Middle Eastern song, but it was an Israeli song. I didn't care. I started dancing in this show called the Pinky Lee Show. He was quite popular in the 60s, you know? Anyway, I had this experience there with that show. And after that, you know, I went back, and then I had to go back to school, and then I had to go a lot of personal drama in my life, dysfunctional parents and a lot of other things that I had to go through. But I moved to San Francisco to live with my father, and we lived on second floor of cleaners, Stanley Cleaners. And it was in the 60s, and it was on Haight and Ashbury. And that's the street where all the, people who were protesting and smoking pot, you know, and sitting there with their families and children. So I was amazed. I said, why are they doing that? Why are hippies? They were hippies. Why are they doing? Why don't they go to work? Why don't they go to school? You know, I couldn't understand it. But anyway, then my father sent me to college. I went to college and I tried to get into a theater group in college, but because of my accent and everything, I had a terrible time. It's in the book, you know, it's in details. And then after that, I still was hoping and hoping. I got involved in a theater group in San Francisco, and they cast me in a leading couple of leads in the theater. I got really great reviews, you know? So that kind of encouraged me. And after I got out of college, I lots of drama again in my personal life. Then I went to Hollywood, and I said, now I'm going to start my career, okay? And, of course, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in the industry. So my mom was a real go-getter. My mother was unbelievable. There's nothing could stand in her way, you know. She says, Tanya, oh yeah, she's a character. She's a real character. In my next book, I write a lot about her. But anyway, she said, you know what? I know someone at a studio. They're going to be making a movie, and his name is George Moscow. And she says, he is a Russian Jew, you know, and I went to school with him in Russia, with his nephew in Russia. You go, you talk to him and ask him to put you in a movie. Of course, I tried to get into the studio, and at the gate, they wouldn't let me in. I said, I put on all my charm and this and that. I finally talked the gate man to let me in the studio. And I go, and I see this Mr. Moscow sitting behind his desk. I walk in, and I start talking Russian to him because I knew he talked Russian, you know. I said, my mother went with your nephew to a school in Russia, and I want to be in your movie. He was laughing. He says, who are you? You look like a gypsy. Because my hair was all blown because my car was open, you know, and my hair was like wild. He goes, who are you? So I said, look, I want to be in your movie. What do you want me to do? He says, come here. Can you type? I go, yeah, I can type. In those days, there were no copy machines, no computers, nothing. It was you type every page just on typewriter, okay? So he says, I need you to type 3 copies for me of a script and then come back and we'll talk. I said, okay. I go home and I type 3 copies. I come back and I said, oh, Mr. Moscow, here are the 3 copies and I want to play this part. He goes, oh, that's a lead. That's a starring part. I said, yeah, I'll be good. I'm right for that. And he looked at me. He says, no, Barbara Luna is going to play that role, and she is a star. I go, Barbara Luna? I never heard of her. You know? He goes, okay. He says, I'll help you. You can be her stand-in. I said, oh, if she's not feeling well, I can play her? He goes, no, stand-in is someone who stands there. So when they're preparing the lights and the sets, you stand there as she's getting ready in a dressing room. I go, oh, okay. So he hired me for 6 weeks. Well, that's where my problems began. In the film industry. And Mr. Moscow warned me. He says, why do you want to go in the show business? If you want to go in a show business, you have to be a whore. Excuse my language. I go, no, I'm very talented. I don't have to do that. He goes, okay, but I warned you. Sure enough, I was on the set. Everything was going fine. I was doing my job. One day, we were filming at night, and it was a hot, hot night in the studio. We were doing filming outside. And they served ice cream cones. And I go, oh, yeah, I want an ice cream cone. I got an ice cream cone, and I was licking it because it was dripping all over, right? So the director was looking and smiling at me. I go, oh, my God, director is smiling at me. Oh, maybe he'll give me a role in this movie, you know? And I smiled back. He says, come here. And he walked to a dark kind of an alley there on the set and the back and a stage there, you know. So I followed him, and that's where it started. I hate to say this on the show, but it was horrible, and I had no idea what was going on. He pushed me against the wall. He took his, you know, thing, and tried to push me down to him. Anyway, I somehow ran out between his legs and kept running. The next day, I get a call from Mr. Mosco. He goes, "What did you do to the director that he fired you?" I go, "What?" I was too embarrassed to say anything. Finally, he probed it out of me, and I was crying. He goes, "I told you so. I told you. Well, you're no longer working." I go, "Oh, my God." But he says, "Don't worry. My son works a lot, and I'll talk to him. He'll hire you for some jobs, you know." So I started to be an extra. But I didn't like being an extra because I wanted to act. And here I was sitting all day as an extra watching actors act. I said, "No way, I quit. I said, either I'm going to be an actress or nothing, you know. So anyway, that was the beginning of my career, Mac. And it went on and on and on, you know. So my book is very, very, like you say, very raw. It tells you all the things that go on in Hollywood. Plus, I poured my heart out about my personal life, which was not that good. It was very, very disturbing, actually, in every possible way. But I did not want to give up my dream. And I did everything in my power to pursue it. And I kept trying to find a way. And my ballet teacher told me that she knew of an agent that could help me. I go, "Oh, wow, agent, that's great." She says, "Go see Mr. Samuels." I walk in to see Mr. Samuels. And to me, in my mind, he was 100 years old. I don't think he was that old. I don't know how old. But to me, it looked like he was 100, okay? Well, I had no choice. He was a sweet, sweet old man, you know, from New York. He was once a big agent, okay? So anyway, he told me, "Okay, you are going to be my star." I go, "Okay." He goes, "All right, do you have a car?" I said, "Yeah, I have a car." He says, "Come and pick me up. We're going to go to the studio." Well, I didn't ask questions. I came and picked him up, and we went to MGM Studios, okay? And to my surprise, everybody knew him, you know. And we went to an office. Mr. James, lovely gray-haired man who was actually a cripple, but a wonderful, lovely man, okay. And Mr. Samuel says, "Here's my star. You gotta put her in the movie you're making with Bob Hope." So he says, "Okay, it's done. She's going to be in the movie, Bob Hope's movie." I go, "Oh, my God, is that incredible? Bob Hope. I remember since I was a child watching Bob Hope, you know?" So I get a call from a director. He says, "Come on over. I want to talk to you about your role." I go, "Okay." So I go there for several times, and he asks me questions. He asks me if I can dance in this and that and the other, that it was the international girls, and I could be a Middle Eastern girl representing international market and everything in the movie. I go, "Okay." But as it can start going and going, he started getting very, sexually aroused, I guess. I didn't know anything about it. And he comes out of the desk and start chasing me with his thing sticking out, you know, and I go, oh my God, not again. So I grab my purse and I run like crazy. And the secretary outside the door was like looking at me. I came home crying. I said, okay, that's it. I lost my job. That's it, you know. So
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we do have a caller. Are you there, caller? Caller, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
I guess they decided not to talk to us. Are you there, caller? Okay,
well,
I'm sorry, Tanya. I guess the caller's not there. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyway, and this is how my career started. I actually did get into the movie, and I worked in that movie. And Mr. Samuels, a little sweetheart he was, he kept dragging me all over the place. And between him and Dick Bernstein, who was my PR man, would you believe me? He used to charge me $25 a month to do my PR, okay? And,
wow.
Yeah, he was so nice and so good. He had me all over the place. He had me in magazines and newspaper and reporter, Variety, you know, everywhere, every day. So everybody in the studio thought I was really doing fantastic. So when Samuels would try to make an appointment, they thought, oh, she's working all the time. Okay, we'll see her, you know. Unfortunately, I was typecast, you know. I was typecast either as a belly dancer, a lot as a belly dancer, but that led me to have also some small parts, okay? And that went on for a long time. And then I was asked to go to Las Vegas and be a headliner in Vegas. So I went to Flamingo Hotel again, and I was a headliner. And there's a lot of very strange stories that is in my book, you know. And so basically, I was the first one, when I was writing this book, I was the first one to expose Hollywood to sexual harassment. And this was, what, about 15 years ago I wrote this book? And people would say, you can't write that. I go, oh, yes, I can. I don't care. I am writing because I want young talent to be aware what they're getting into. Okay?
Right. I am sorry to interrupt you again, but I think the caller is trying again. So
okay.
I'm going to see if they can hear us this time. Caller, are you there? Caller, are you there? I guess they're not getting through for some reason. You can't hear the caller either, can you, Tanya?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll just have to continue on. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. Anytime anybody calls, just interrupt me. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. So. So my career went on, and I started working all the time, everywhere. But it was difficult because you have to go on interviews, right? You have to go on interviews during the day. But if you're not working, you're not making money, but yet you need to survive. So I had to get a job dancing in nightclubs, belly dancing. How I got into belly dancing and actually became a very good belly dancer. And I was working, my first job was Egyptian Gardens, and I was working there, and they were lovely owners, and there were three other girls working there dancing. One of them was Tahia, and she was very strange dancer, lovely person. When you talk to her in a dressing room, she goes on the stage and she was wild. She had her face full of dots and things on her face drawn, you know, like I don't know, different designs. And then she would go and dance and dance and then sit on the floor and pick her feet, dirt out of her feet. So people did not know how to take her, but she was very effective, like she was a Bedouin, just came into this country, you know? Yeah, but I loved her. She was a character. And there were two other girls. One of them was Lori, and the other one was a girl that I'm still friends with, Valerie. You know, we're still friends with her. I talk to her, I see her, yeah. And anyway, I got a part in a musical at that time while I was working at the Egyptian Gardens, and in a musical with called Fanny with Walter Slezak. Okay, it was a Broadway show here in Los Angeles in a theater in the Round. So I played a nice little part plus dancing and singing and the whole thing. And again, got really good reviews. So the people cast me in another musical with Mickey Rooney, called Whatever Happened on the Way to the Forum with Mickey Rooney. Again, I did a dance, and the audience went bananas, and they gave me standing ovations. So Mickey Rooney decided to stretch our scene. He would add different dialogue, you know, and this and that. So the scene kept getting bigger and bigger. And there's a really interesting story what happened to Mickey Rooney during that time. It was not a very happy time for him. But it's all in a book. I don't want to go into it, okay? And
right.
A couple of years later, or a year later, when I was in Vegas, he was in Vegas doing a show as well. So I went to see his show, and he was so happy. And he says, "Oh yeah, book me a table. Me and my friends are coming to see your show at the Flamingo." I go, "Okay." So I kept booking the table, and he'd never show up. And this went on for a week. So I said, you know what, that's it. I'm not doing it. So when I talked to his manager, his name was Red, and Red told me, "Do you know what happened to Mickey?" I said, "No, he never showed up." He goes, "He would get drunk, and he was telling everybody he's going to Flamingo and getting married to you." I go, "What? I don't want to marry. I don't want to marry Mickey Rooney." You know, so anyway, that's another story, and there's lots of stories in Las Vegas and so on and so forth. And you know, I can't tell you enough how fortunate I feel that I was I made it in the industry as far as I went, you know. And when I did the Star Trek, which was an amazing experience, and I never even knew what that was all about. When I asked Samuels, my agent, he goes, "You have an interview." I go, "Oh, where? In Paramount." I go, "Well, what is the show?" He goes, "I don't know, some star something." I go, "Well, what is it about?" He goes, "I don't know, just go get the job, you know?" So I went and I realized that there was some acting and dancing. So I auditioned for both and I was hired, you know? That's how the Star Trek started. It took 4 days for the makeup department trying to experiment on my face for the role that I played. And they put feathers in my eyelashes, in my nose, in my around my nose, mouth, ears, everywhere were feathers, different colors. And they would send me to the director, who was Pevney, Joe Pevney. And he'd look and he says, "No, no, no." He says, "Less." This went on for 4 days. I didn't care. I was getting paid for it. You know, I thought, okay, whatever. So finally, I wound up with no feathers, nothing, just regular makeup. And if anybody saw that episode called Wolf in a Fold, Star Trek, they will see. I look beautiful. I really was surprised myself when they gave me that beautiful close-up, you know. And after that, I dated Shatner. There was a lot of other stories about him before even I did the show, another show that I did. Anyway, we started dating, and he was most charming, most wonderful. We had so much fun until I found out he was dating everybody else in Hollywood, you know. I said, "I'm an old-fashioned girl. I go with, you know, with one man." I can't. So I kind of disappeared. He tried to contact me. I never told him why. I just disappeared. I wouldn't answer his calls or anything, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting stories about Shatner and I. And there was another movie that I just fell in love as a person to Rod Taylor in a movie called The Hell with Heroes. I played a role and I danced. And anyway, that's an amazing story, I'm telling you. It's all in the book, and I don't want to take too much time trying to tell everybody when they can read it, okay? They can read it.
Oh, yes, and it's a wonderful book, very engaging. And I'm just going to take one more chance because to see if this person wants to talk. I'm assuming that they can hear us okay because I can see that they're still there. So I'll try one more time. Caller, if you want to ask Tanya a question, she's more than willing to talk with you. Are you there?
Well, I don't know if you can hear
Caller?
Me. My name is Alejandro Claverán. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. We couldn't hear you before.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Probably we had a bad connection or something. Maybe my phone, I don't know. Well, I want to congratulate Tanya. She's an incredible, great actress, and she's an excellent writer, and she is very, very, very intelligent and very talented.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And, well, of course, I read her book, and it's the most fascinating, like it was said, it was most fascinating, most engaging, and very interesting insight into the Hollywood scene. It's something that most people don't even know or don't think about. But anyway, I'm sorry. I hear everything you're saying. I'm just enjoying it. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay,
oh,
well,
that,
nice
that's...
talking to you. Yeah, nice talking to
Wait.
You, yes.
I just wanted to say one thing, Alejandro. I am so sorry that we couldn't hear you. I mean, who knows what it was, and so sorry about that, but thank you for sticking with us, and you can stay on the line if you want, and if you want to, like, just pop in and say something, you're welcome to do that. I don't think Tanya would mind.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll be listening. It's very, 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 very interesting. I enjoy it very much.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Tanya, so were you going to say anything else in particular? Because if not, I was going to go ahead and start talking about your different roles and movies and stuff.
Yeah, no, go ahead, because I can't say everything in the book. it's not
right.
Fair there. Yeah.
Because you want people to get it and read it, right? Okay, so in the interest of time, I probably won't go through all the ones that I originally had, because I did want you to talk about your book. But I just wanted to start with the first one on IMDb, which was A Global Affair. And you were uncredited for that. They did a lot of that back in the old days. But if you could just talk about that for a couple of minutes.
Okay. That's the one I did with Bob Hope. Okay.
Right.
And that's the one that the director was. Anyway. That's the director who was running after me. Anyway,
yeah.
The experience was really wonderful. The producer was a nice man. He actually was nominated, but he needed to leave town because of his mother's health or something, and for foreign press, the... what do you call it? Oh, God. A global. No, not global. What is this called? Not Academy Awards, but anyway, I can't think right now. It was an award to be given to the producers. So they asked me if I could get the award for him. And
mm-hmm.
So I was so excited, and I did. I got the award for him, and I met Paul Newman. Oh, wow. Was he gorgeous? He was there. Oh, my God, you know. He was so beautiful. His blue eyes and smile to die for, you know. So I was very fortunate to meet some fabulous stars in those days, you know. As I say, I was a very fortunate person. Then they asked me for Global Affair, me and the other girls, because we were all international girls. And we had to go and do like a publicity tour. So we went everywhere to appear to publicize this movie, the Bob Hope movie, Global Affair. And of course, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. I had photos with the girls and everything. So I lost a lot of my pictures and information because of my house. My house burned down in 2013, and I lost a lot of stuff. But I still have a lot of things, okay? And it was a great experience. It was a story about international affair. It's called Global Affair. With different girls and a baby involved. The baby was involved, cute little baby. And, of course, Bob Hope was wonderful. Later on, I did some shows with him for Christmas, for veterans, you know. Every Christmas, we would go and do these Christmas shows for veterans. And of course, it was on the stage, and we did the show and this and that. But there's some soldiers could not be in the theater because they were not able to walk or whatever. So Bob Hope and I would go to their rooms and say hello and talk to them, you know. So Bob Hope and I, and this went on, before for several years. So some of these people who were in bed already knew me, okay? And so Bob Hope and I, we walked in a room, and like this one soldier said, "Tanya, Tanya, come here, come here." I go, "Hi." And I went rushing to him, you know? And I went rushing to him, and Bob Hope got really upset. He came over and pushed me back. He says, "I'm the star here." I go, "Oh, Mr. Hope, I'm so sorry. I apologize, you know." I don't blame him, you know. I was taking his attention away from him, you know. Right. I didn't mean to do it. It just happened that way, you know. But other than that, he was wonderful. Bob Hope was wonderful, wonderful man. Very on the set, he would never stop making jokes in between takes. And when we took lunch, when we had a break, the man had the most incredible energy. Non-stop, never got tired, cracking jokes. And, of course, I was tired of laughing. A lot of times I didn't even understand his humor because I'm not all-American, you know. All-American humor sometimes escapes me. But yeah. I laughed anyway. I laughed anyway, you know. I laughed anyway. So, yeah, no, he was a very lovely man. And what he did for the troops and America and the industry, he's just have to. You know what breaks my heart, Mac? I sometimes go on these signing events, and mm-hmm. I have a picture of me and Bob Hope, and they say, "Oh, who's this?" I say, "Bob Hope." They look at me and say, "Who's Bob Hope?" I go, "Oh, my God." Yeah, because I guess people forget, you know, or they didn't even know at that time, you know, or now. They knew him then, but younger people don't know him. Yeah. So those are some stories on Global Affair.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, what I'm going to do now is skip. I'm going to skip to the farther in the future, and then if we have time, I'll go back to some of the older stuff. But I wanted to talk about this fan-made film, Star Trek of Gods and Men, because you were a part of that. So tell us about doing that.
Well, I was called to be in it. I kept asking, "Well, what am I playing?" Or, "No, don't worry, you just play yourself." I said, "Well, I don't know how to play myself. My character died in a story." They said, "Don't worry, just come." I said, "Okay." So anyway, it was wonderful because actors that were in it, I knew them and I liked all of them, you know. And so we visited and talked, but my role was really very small. I didn't even know why I was there. So, but it was fun. It was fun. It was a good show.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. So that's Okay.
Well, one of the reasons why they wanted you, because I know a lot of the people that worked on it, is because they wanted a lot of the people that had done Star Trek, whether it was one episode or whether they were a regular, and it was just like a love fest for Star Trek. And
yeah.
for your fans specifically, and for fans of the series, it was a great thing, because I was like, because I saw you right away, and I was like, there she is. And of course, there were other people in there that I knew, too. And it was really, really great to see all of those people that you knew from Star Trek. It was amazing. And I'm glad it was fun for you.
Oh, it was. We were there for several days. We had a lot of fun. Celeste Yarnell and the original Star Trek people were there, and of course
we socialized.
Celeste, a lot of them passed away, you know, and I'm just so sad, especially Celeste. She was such an incredible woman, you know, beautiful, great talent, and just a great lady. And it was a good experience. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So now I wanted to ask you about something that was on IMDb. Now, you may not be able to talk about it depending on how new it is and everything, but on there it says that it was just announced, something called The Return of the Enchantress. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Yes, yes. I was cast in it before this COVID thing hit, you know? So I was cast in a very nice role as a sorcerer. How do you say it? Sorcerer? Yes, thank you. And it's a very lovely role, and it even goes into the sequel. If there's a sequel, then it continues, you know? And so I was very excited, and then the COVID hits, and everything was postponed for now. But I think they're still preparing it, so hopefully soon we can do that movie. They want to film some things here, and then they're going to go Abu Dhabi, and then India also. And the story is fascinating about, actually touches global warming, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's written by Salim, the director, producer, he wrote it in such a way that it's very, very interesting. He shows in the story different times of global warming, okay? He goes from ancient to modern. And I think it'll be a very, very successful movie, and I'm thrilled that I'll be involved in it. You know, yeah.
Hmm.
So, and the other producer is Lana Gutman. She's Russian, you know, and we had several meetings together. She's the other producer. Los Angeles producer, and Salim is from New York. He's made several other movies and always did good movies, you know? So, yeah, that's that.
Okay. Now, I want to make sure that we talk about your second book, at least for a little bit, even if we don't get to go back to some of your film stuff. So,
okay.
Tell us about the second book. I mean, you can make it short if you want to, just to give us a rough idea of what it's about.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a short book, but I will make it very kind of short synopsis of it. Okay. I just finished my rough draft. I'm going back and adding some more research material that I got to make sure that I have the right information, you know, historical information. So I'm going back to that and adding things. But basically, it is the story of my parents. I start out with my mother, and we start here in a museum. Like I said, we had a dream. My mother had a dream, my father had a dream, and I had a dream, okay? My mother was an artist, and she wanted her art in museums. My father was a geologist, and he wanted to work as a geologist. However, when we first came here, my father worked as a janitor, my mother as a cleaning rooms in a hotel, but they never gave up on their dream, you know? So my book is about them. When they were growing up in Russia, they did not know each other until later. My mother's father was an officer in a white army, okay? And her mother and father, they had a nice place to live. They were dressed well. They were educated people and everything. However, what happened in Russia is it started with revolution, then it went to civil war, and then the socialism, then communism came, and the whole country went crazy. Okay, they were people were promised that they will have equality. Of course, the czar had to resign, and then later they executed him and his family. But that's everybody kind of knows that. So what happened is my grandfather, my mother's father, was executed when he gave himself up. They said, oh, it doesn't matter. If you were in the White Army, come out from your hiding and everything is forgiven. Well, it wasn't so. He was executed. My mother was like 5 years old or so. It devastated her because she loved her father, okay? So and then she had to, and her mother kind of lost her mind after her husband got executed, and she was very abusive to my mother. She treated her terribly. She beat her up, and oh my God, my mother as a child went through so much, you know? But it made her so strong, so fearless, that later in her life, she managed to get a diploma in art, and she was teaching art. They sent her to Turkmenistan to teach children that were poor children, you know, and she was teaching them. But she and her girlfriend were going to that teaching the underprivileged children, and they were really close to Iran border, and there was hunger, people dying on the street of hunger, okay? And they decided to go to Iran, cross the border, go to Iran, and they were thinking getting enough produce and things and come back. Well, it didn't work that way. And in order not to be stopped at the patrols on the borderline, they took the hard way and they had to cross these tall, tall, difficult mountains, which there's all these episodes, all these adventures that the two girls went through. Yeah, it was an amazing thing. And her girlfriend was very nervous and very fragile, but my mother wasn't, so she was the strong one. So her girlfriend would always follow her behind in the mountains and everything. And there was one episode where they were walking, and all of a sudden they slipped. My mother slipped, and her girlfriend was in the back of her, and they started going down the cliff. And, I mean, they would have gotten down the cliff, but my mother saw a little tree, and just before the cliff, she grabbed this little tree. And her girlfriend grabbed her. And they were hanging there for their lives, you know, on this little tree, you know. And slowly my mother said, okay, to her friend, she said, you put your left foot, then right foot, there's a little road, and then I'll follow. Of course, her girlfriend was so scared, but she pumped her up. She says, we've got to survive. We must survive, you know. We can do it, you know. So they did. They finally got out of that danger. Then there were other things that they finally reached the bottom and fell down in the sand. Their hair was full of sand. They looked horrible, right? But they were basically pretty blonde, blue-eyed, young 19-year-old girls, okay? So they got to the to the Iranian soil, looked around. They said, there's no one around. And my mother said, oh, and they lost everything. They lost the little pieces of bread. They lost everything they had because when they fell, you know. The only thing that my mother had in her pocket was a compass, okay? So it was a compass. So they started walking. My mom says, I remember in the map, we should go to the right. So they started walking to the right. So they started walking and walking, and there were two men walking. And my mom said, oh, there's somebody walking. Let's wave to them. So the two men, the Persian, kind of dark Persians, you know, very, how can I say, not very educated or anything, you know. Excuse me. They saw the two girls. Yeah, they saw the two girls, and they say, wow, these are beautiful girls. And they were ready to rape them, okay? They were ready to rape them. So my mother says, oh, my God, what do we do? So she takes the compass and starts flying. She couldn't speak Farsi, nothing, you know? So she started flashing the compass in front of them. And they thought it was magic. And they wanted to grab the compass, but she wouldn't let them have it. She threw it as far as she could. And they ran after it, fighting over it, the two guys. While they were doing that, my mother and her girlfriend ran like maniacs and hid behind a rock. By then, they lost the two guys, and they kept walking and walking. And then there was a little horse and buggy with a man and a woman. And they picked them up. And they were nice people. They took them home. They fed them. They cleaned them. They took them to town. And in town, they helped them get a job cleaning hotel rooms. And my mom's girlfriend met a very wealthy antique collector in the hotel. And they, without language, fell in love, okay? And he took them to Tehran. And there's a whole big story of adventures of my mother in Tehran, how she wound up in a palace, working on the palace art and was saved. And, oh, and she opened a business. In those days, a woman having her own business and being successful. Unheard of. They were going to exile her. But someone from the Shah's palace saved her by taking her to the palace. Anyway, there's so many adventures, you know? So that's basically, but my mom met my dad and they got married. And we all had this dream to go to Hollywood. My first dream started when I was little, like maybe 4 or 5 years old. My mom took me to see Shirley Temple's movie, okay?
Oh.
And yeah, and I loved the movie. And when the movie was finished, I go, Mommy, let's go say hello to the girl, to the little girl. She goes, the little girl is not there. Oh, yeah, she's there. She's behind that white thing, you know, white sheet. Mom says, no. Yes, let's go. No, she's in Hollywood. Oh, Hollywood? I want to go to Hollywood. That was the beginning of my dream to go to Hollywood to meet Shirley Temple. So, yeah, lots of adventures in Iran and how I got into a play at a very early age and how, anyway, it's a story that is, like you say, you read my book, this is the way I write. I can't write very intellectually. I write the way I talk, like I talk to you, you know. So it's easy for people to read without getting a dictionary.
Yeah.
Simple English. Just keep going with the story. Forget about the letters and vocabularies. No, I have vocabularies, but you know what I mean. So, and we had a dream, and we finally came to America, and it ends with all the struggles we had and everything, however, how we all accomplished our American dream. And that's my story that I'm trying to let people know. America, United States, is the most incredible country, which my parents loved it. I love it. And we have such great American people. We need to treasure it. We need to take care of it. We need to unite and get along. This is our country. This is a beautiful America. You know, no one in the world has such a beautiful country. That's why everybody wants to come here, you know?
Yeah.
So, basically that's my message in this book that I'm writing. I've finished writing, actually. So, yeah. And
it sounds exciting.
I like it. I don't know if anybody else will.
Yeah. I'm sure people will love it. I mean, the way that you write, you can feel, because you write your true feelings. And I don't know about the caller, but when I was reading your book, it was like I could feel what you were feeling at the time that you were writing it, with all the different things that were happening to you. Like when you were getting angry in the book, I was getting angry in the book. And when you were happy in the book, I was happy. And so that's how you write. You have your own style, and it works for you. And so I'm sure the second book will be just as good as the first.
Yeah, it has a lot of also drama in Russia as well, you know. And my father, you know, he too had to deal with in Russia, because he did finish in St. Petersburg, he finished geological education, and then he went to Paris and got his diploma in Paris, you know. a very intelligent man he was, very intelligent, hard worker, very intelligent man. And so when we came to America, he heard that in Washington, D.C., they were looking for geologists for Alaskan pipeline. So he went to take a test. When he went to take a test, he had to take a test with graduates, Harvard graduate, young doctors, you know, young people. And he was 55, okay? So when they looked at the results, test results, he had the highest score. So the people said, this man is cheating. Who is this man, 55 years old? He had all these great, he did so well. So they called him in the office and they started firing questions. And my father, you know, with the big brown eyes and thick accent, he was saying, answering them, all the questions they ask him, and they go, oh my God, this man knows something, you know? He does actually know. So they hired him to be the top geologist in Alaskan Pipeline. And he worked there until he retired, you know, American dream again, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 That's amazing. So, that's amazing.
Anything's possible, anyone that's listening. Anything's possible. Don't close doors. Open doors, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Any more questions?
Well, I did want to, since we have time, a little bit of time. We got a little bit over 20 minutes. So I'll ask maybe a couple of movies. One I specifically marked down because you got to play something other than a belly dancer, and you played a judge, and that was in a movie called Misfit Patrol. So tell us about that one.
Okay. Misfit Patrol. Is that the one that I... Oh, the judge. Yes, yes. Okay. I was having a really difficult time in my life at that time in my life. I don't want to go into that. That's my personal situation. I was very, very trying to get myself out of a lot of issues in my life. So I was sitting there in my office really trying to figure everything out. And I get a call from a director, okay, that I worked with before. And he says, I want you to be on a set tomorrow to play a judge. I go, are you kidding? I have a broken leg, which I did. I broke my leg. Yeah. That's another story. I don't want to go into it, but I had a broken leg. I said, no, I can't do that. First of all, I'm too busy. I can't get there tomorrow, and I have a broken leg. And the director says, I don't care. Come. I said, I never even saw the script. He says, I'll give you the script. I said, as long as it's a small role, I can handle it if it's, you know. He says, no, just come. So I on crutches, I get on a set. He gives me my pages. I didn't know the story. I didn't know what it was about. He gives me these pages, and he says, you're a judge, and these are your pages. There were like three pages of dialogue, okay? There's no way I could memorize the lines, you know? So what I did is I had to walk in and go on a podium and start the scene. But before I went on the, what I did is I took these pages and I spread them on the podium as if I'm a judge looking at some documents, right? But all I was looking was the lines. Anyway, but before I got there, I'm walking in my crutches, right? And just before I get there, I trip and fall.
Oh.
Before I get up. Yeah. I fall and everybody cracks up and I get myself up. I get on the podium thing and there was a glass of water. I take it and I gargle the water. You know, everybody was like, it's a comedy, okay? So everybody was laughing, right? So I sit down and that's how I did my whole scene, with a broken leg, falling down, with not knowing the story, not knowing the line, and you know what? It turned out to be the funniest thing. The funniest thing. Yeah, yeah. I did another that I want to mention. Okay, my friend Brooks Wattell. He saw me in It Takes a Thief, okay? He saw me in It Takes a Thief with Robert Wagner on television. And he called my agent and they set up my appointment. So I called Brooks to find out where do I meet. And he says, just come over to my house. I thought, oh, okay, fine. So I talked to him on the phone, and this man had this deep, deep voice, right? So I go, okay. So I show up at his door, and he opens the door, and I'm looking, this young kid with a deep voice. I thought, this kid is like, I don't know how old he was, but he's so young. I thought, oh, my God. But after talking to him, I realized how talented, intelligent he was, okay? So he cast me in the movie to play a British actress who was engaged to a lord. It's a gothic horror movie, okay?
Wow.
And when I came on the set, they made me so beautiful in the turn of a century, wardrobe, beautiful makeup, hair. You know, I did not look anything like anything I've done before, you know? And I found out that this man, the director, he was also a producer, was a master in lighting things. He was lighting actors to create a mood. He lit me so beautifully. I looked so pretty. And he would create a mood with lighting. And so we did the movie. And we became good friends. Brooks and I, we became friends for up to now. We're friends now, okay? And he had an idea to write a story called Lady Sherlock. So he and I and my little son at the time went to one of my resort places in Oxnard. And we started talking about it. I gave him my ideas. We came back and forth. And he sat down and wrote a screenplay. And I read, gave him notes, you know, I wasn't a writer at the time or anything. But we just kept talking. He wrote the screenplay, but then just a few years ago, he wrote a book called Lady Sherlock. He took some photos of me as Lady Sherlock Holmes, and I'm throughout his book as Lady Sherlock.
Aww.
So, yeah, the book is published, and he's on his second book, Lady Sherlock number 2, okay? So, yeah, that was another wonderful experience that happens in the industry. There's so many good people, you know? So many good people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the same. It's just a shame that the bad ones you know, that old saying that it only takes one bad apple to spoil the whole bunch.
I know. But you know what? With this thing with Epstein or whoever. Anyway, with Epstein and the one that did harass all the actresses and everything. I mean, you know, it was a normal thing for all these men to do at the time. It was a normal thing. They all took advantage of it. They all took advantage of their positions. I tried to learn, and I became the biggest diplomat in the world. I learned how to be diplomatic without hurting the male ego, you know? And even with all that went on, we actually still were talking to each other, you know, years later. So, so that was the nature of the business. I'm sure that's still going on today, but it was really bad in those days, really bad.
I've heard a lot of stories.
I would like to find some contact with somebody, Netflix or somewhere. I don't know. I have to investigate to see if I can. I wrote a screenplay on How Belly Will Travel. I wrote it as a movie and I wrote it as a television series. You know, so. I would really like to see it in Netflix, for instance, you know, because there's a lot of good stories in there. We'll see what happens. Anyway.
There was one more I wanted to ask about, but you could just, like, make it kind of short because we are getting low on time. We got like 12 minutes. And the only reason why I picked this one is because it's 20 years after you did A Global Affair and you were playing a belly dancer 20 years after you played a belly dancer in A Global Affair, Last Resort. But you also were the choreographer of the dance sequences and a location manager. And so I've actually seen that movie, and it was a good movie. But if you could just talk about that for a couple of minutes.
Okay, just very quickly. During a very difficult time in my life, which I don't want to go into, I wound up working as a location manager, later as a production manager and producer, director, and the whole thing in the industry. But I did not do a belly dance in Bob Hope's movie, by the way. I didn't start it until later, okay? But 20 years later, I kept going and going as a belly dancer. Yeah, so the when I was a location manager, I also did choreography for the movie and also got locations, and that house that you saw was my girlfriend, who I knew, we were roommates when we were very, very young, and I got her into belly dancing, and then she married and so on and so forth, and they had this beautiful home, and that's where we filmed it.
That was a really great film. I love that, and you were good in it. And actually, I thought everybody was good in it. So it was a good experience for you, I'm glad if it was a good experience for you.
It was a good experience, but it was a lot of hard work. When you're 16 hours on working on a set for 6 days a week, it's pretty gruesome, and I became very, everybody wanted me in the industry, not everybody, but lots of people wanted me in the industry to work in the production end of it, because I was a hard worker, and I saved money for producers, you know. Ashok Amitraj I did a lot of movies for him. in production, he couldn't stop talking about how I was saving him money all over the place, you know? So, yeah, it was a difficult job. But I finally, when I got out of my financial mess, it's a long story how I got there, and I quit. And that's when I start writing, you know, writing screenplays. I wrote many screenplays. I was hired to write screenplays based on a book, through stories. Then I came out with stories. I wrote screenplays. And then I wrote this book, Havelli. And also I'm writing this one. And I still have many other books that I would like to write.
Yeah, you have them all there in your head.
Yeah, I do. I do. I certainly do, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're getting down to, like, close to the end. So I did want to ask you to let any listeners know what is the best way to get a hold of you, whatever way that is that you prefer.
Well, they can get hold of me. They can go on my website to see all my photos, my book, and everything, which is www.TanyaLamaniGeorge.com. But if they want to directly contact me, they can contact me if they're on Facebook, through Facebook, or they can even contact me through my email. Okay?
All
which
right.
is, yeah, my email, which is TanLamani@yahoo.com. Tan is T like Tom, A, N like Nancy, L, E, M like Mary, A, N, I, @yahoo.com.
Okay, thank you. Now, before I close out the show, I did want to ask the caller, because it shows that the caller is still there. So, caller, if you – this is the end of the show. So if you want to ask a short question or make another comment to Tanya now that the show is over, please go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm just curious when your next book is going to be coming out, because I really enjoy the ones you have written, and you write very personably, in the first person, and you're very engaging and very interesting. I couldn't put the book down.
Thank you. Anyway, this book, I am now going and doing some rewrites and cleaning up and everything. And as soon as I do that, I will find an editor to go over it one more time, and then I'll publish it. And it'll be ready maybe the end of the year or beginning of January. So,
that would be great.
Yeah.
I'll be looking forward for it.
Fantastic. So good talking to you, Alejandro.
My pleasure.
Very nice
talking
to you.
It's always an honor, Tanya. You're incredibly interesting, talented, and such a great writer and great person. Unbelievable.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks. It makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It must be a lot of fun for you to write memories and to write everything that you've experienced, everything you've lived. It's very, very unique life. You're very, very fortunate, like you said. It's very, very nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, Alejandro.
We're very fortunate to have you, too. We're very fortunate to have you here in the United States to write down and to communicate all these experiences to a lot of people.
Yeah, well, you know, this country is made out of different nationality, people that come here, you know? We're all in the same boat. We're all foreigners in this country. And this country is so big, it welcomes everybody, you know? And that's so beautiful. Yeah.
That's
so,
the United States is a great country. That's very true. It's a great
country.
The more I travel around the United States, the more I love the people in every state.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of good people everywhere. Lots of good people everywhere. So,
I agree. Anything else, Alejandro?
Well, that's it. I really enjoy her movies. I enjoy her books. She's extremely talented. Boy, what can I say? She's great. She's very, very, very good. Thank you so much, Sonia. I really appreciate it. You provide a lot of entertainment to a lot of people.
Oh, thank you, Alejandro. God bless you all. God bless everybody, and God bless America.
Yes, I agree with that. Tanya, is there anything that you want to say in closing to your listeners and your fans?
Just be positive, everybody. Just be positive and sit down and write your stories. Everybody has a good story. All you have to do is just write it from your heart, okay? And leave it for your family. If nothing more, just leave it for your family so they will know who you are, okay? And that's what I have to do, say to everybody. And please, please be positive, be loving, and be God-fearing and God-loving, and love everybody and spread the good love to everyone. We need it so much today. We need it badly.
We do.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. That's a very, very nice message. And so I just wanted to say to Alejandro, thank you for calling in. We do appreciate it. And
thank you, my guest,
Tanya Lamani George, thank you so much. You were a very entertaining and engaging guest. And I totally enjoyed having you. And I hope sometime in the future you would want to come back on the show. So thank you very much. And I'm going to close out the show and say have a good night and be safe.
Thank you. You too, darling. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
God bless you all.
Good night.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Bye.